Hello, I'm Cara Cox, Marketing and Design Coordinator for MediaSoc. Today, George will be joined by Will Gore, journalist and former executive editor of The Independent. Will be talking about his career in journalism, as well as sharing some top tips for those keen to work in the industry. You're listening to Insiders, the Oxford University Media Society podcast.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Will. How are you doing? I'm very well as well, thank you. So I think let's start with you. Would you be able to introduce yourself to our listeners, and can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what your career is?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Will Gore. I'm currently head of partnerships and projects at the National Council for the Training of Journalists, or the NCTJ. I went to Oxford. I was at Univ between 97 and 2000, and history there, and had a great time, of course. And the truth is, after that, I really didn't know what with my life or career at all. And actually, I thought, I'll just go home and plague off my parents for a couple of months. And within about 2 weeks, my mum started getting a bit fed up with me not really making much effort. So she started cutting out job ads from the paper and leaving them outside my bed morning. And this is a rather embarrassing reality. But yeah, basically, I applied for a job that she'd seen, the Press Complaints Commission, which was the self-regulatory body at the time, which dealt with complaints about newspapers and their websites. I hadn't heard of it before. I didn't really know much about what it did, obviously, but I thought, that sounds kind of interesting, media related, which 21-year-old who's done a history degree isn't interested in media. So I applied a fairly lowly job there as a complaints assistant, which was a kind of basic grad position. Got the started in 2000 in September, I think. And I ended up 11 years doing various jobs along the way, starting off in complaints. Then I took over the kind of the international work that the other press councils around the world, and then went on to sort of take over the external affairs at the PCC. And it was just completely fascinating. And I, became completely hooked on, the big ethical question that would come along day in, day out, around, what newspaper digitally doing. So I did that it didn't feel like a very long time back then, but looking back, of course, it really was quite a significant portion. And then around the time of the Leveson inquiry, in fact, just as it was announced, I think very swiftly, lots of newspapers thought, perhaps we haven't paid enough attention to complaints and regulation. Including done anything wrong, certainly not on the phone hacking front. Really, as a consequence of that, ended up being offered a job as deputy managing editor at the Evening Standard, and were both owned by the same group, and ultimately by the Lebedev family. And often did that in 2011, really at the outset, with the idea that I would just look after processes and handle reader grumbles and give pre-publication advice as well, and that kind of thing. And then over the course of time, the job doing all sorts of, just weird and wonderful standard in the indie, helping to run campaigns. I'm a leader writer for both Standard and the indie. Wrote a cricket column for the, and just kind of took every, and then in, when would it have been? Basically, I think after I'd been there for about 6 years, I switched jobs and became executive editor of the Indie. So just focusing on the business at a time when really the two parts of SI, as the sort of the overarching group was known, had become much more separate than had previously been. And that was a much more editorial, which was again great fun. When there was just so much going on in the world of global politics, Brexit over here, Trump, and so much else besides. That was also completely fantastic. And then last I say, which like another sort of interesting, you know, possibility. And I'd felt I'd been in the newsroom by that point for about 8 years, and thought, well, perhaps, you know, now's the time to try something else within this broader sector. So I was looking at that job almost exactly a year ago. So that's where I am today. So that's a very, very, very long introduction. I'm sorry, it's far too long as to, you know, why I've ended up doing what I've done.
No, that's great. Thank you, Will. And we can bounce back to the NCTJ work in a minute. But something which I'd like to ask very quickly, you've spoken about your time at The Independent, obviously in quite a senior position. I imagine that was quite an interesting time, right? Because they ceased printing in, was it 2016? Okay, so were you kind of there for, I guess, witnessing the transition to digital?
So at the time of the transition, I was still kind of 50-50, Evening Standard, Independent. And then I sort of moved over to the Indie a year after they'd gone digital. But yes, I was there at that period. And it was... yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary time, really, looking back on it. And I think it's one I don't quite realise when it's happening, just sort of how momentous it is. But of course, it was an extraordinarily radical shift, one that was really, I think, you know, necessary if the Indie, and of course, it has gone on to do that and indeed to thrive. And, you know, there was obviously terrible sadness for an awful lot of people at the demise of what was, you know, what had been a great print publication. And you know, there was obviously the personal tragedy, their jobs and so on, was pretty grim. But you know, I think what came out of that transition was an understanding that actually, a, you know, digital only platforms can survive, you know, the modern news world, and B, legacy brands like The Independent, real power rachet. And I think, you know, that to some extent explains why it was able to make that, allied to the fact that, you know, despite that massive change, The Independent carried on doing very good journalism. You know, that was at the heart of what it had always done, and that's at the heart of what it continues to do now.
And it's still doing very well.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, it is a testament to Christian, you know, the editor there, and to many others at The Independent, both on the commercial side, that it has been so successful. And, you know, sure, be without its hiccups. And what I think you realise as a digital publisher, mercy is so many things that are outside your control. I mean, it's, you know, the recent circumstances have shown that's true for print as well, up to a point. But I think with digital, you know, any time, for example, that Facebook makes a change the way it presents news feed, or any time that Google changes its, you know, algorithms, suddenly you find that your business has changed because of something that you had nothing to do with, and that's quite challenging. But ultimately, I think if you carry on doing really brilliant journalism and you carry on doing it in a very engaging way, you can make a success of it, and the Indie has absolutely demonstrated that.
That's really interesting. And I was wondering, perhaps, could you tell me a little bit more about your current role working with the NCTJ, and in particular, the Community News Project, and what this kind of relationship with Facebook looks like?
Yes, so I went to the NCTJ because the NCTJ had essentially gone into partnership with Facebook and regional news publishers around the UK. To run the Community News Project, which basically means that Facebook is funding about 80 community news reporters across, you know, many, many newsrooms in the UK. The NCTJ is managing that project and overseeing the training of those journalists, which is a very much key element of the project. So it was part of that project that I went to the NCTJ. But my role there, as well as looking after the Community News Project, is a broader one, looking at develop across the media sector, with, you know, both with sponsors, contributors to our work, with, you know, platforms in which we do our training and so on. So it's really fascinating. You know, I think ultimately the strand that ties all the bits of my career so far together, standards and trust and quality. Starting off in regulation, moving into newsroom, where largely I was kind of looking at those ethical questions a lot. Now in the kind of an awful lot of that is concerned with the same issues. So it feels like a continuum to a very large extent. What's fantastic is, I guess, to see the strength that there is in journalism training in the UK, which obviously is crucial if you want to continue having a sector that does high-class journalism.
And that's something I'd quite like to pick up on, actually. So am I right in saying that the Community News Project is essentially seeking to kind of train and place people in local newsrooms?
You might say, effectively, reporters that the scheme has brought on, they are all employed by whichever publisher they are working for. Some of them will be employed by Reach in its various newsrooms around the UK, others by NewsQuest, Media Archant, Barnsley Chronicle, and so on. To essentially oversee the project at the kind of the up, the higher level, making sure. But at the individual level, each of the reporters, as well as basically having a 2-year contract to work for their employer, at the same time they are also undertaking qualification, either the diploma in journalism, or for those who have a bit more experience and already have the diploma, they're working towards the national qualification in journalism, which is effectively like the kind of senior reporter qualification, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So this all sounds quite positive, actually, because I think, for the last couple of years, the last 3 or 4 months, we've been hearing that, local, I suppose, is struggling, and in some places is a little bit of a dying breed. And I mean, a lot of, there have been a lot of closures already, but this sounds like there's still hope, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't ever understate the challenges that have existed in the local and regional media in this country. Many of those challenges and so on have been accelerated, it's happened in the last 3 or 4 months, as you say. Equally, I think the regional news industry in the UK is an awful lot more robust than people give it credit for. And I think, yes, it absolutely is having to accelerate changes that were already in the offing as we know the increased shift from print to digital. But print isn't dead yet and isn't going to die for some time to come. And B, on the digital side, there is so much innovative work in the local and regional sector that, a lot of strength still there. So I take the view that, yeah, absolutely there are challenges. There are, structural economic challenges and it may be that some some local publishers don't survive, but I think the vast majority will. Those that are prepared and are able to innovate will continue to find audiences. Because I think if the last few months has shown anything, it is that there remains a very significant appetite for high quality, trusted news. So there remain big questions around how that audience can be monetized, but answers will be found, along with, no doubt shifts in the way that, this is the danger, isn't it? Okay. I'm not totally sort of downbeat about the local and regional media at all. Even putting aside the Community News Project, which is a fantastic initiative, which I hope very much will continue after this initial pilot period comes to an end in 2021.
And I mean, what are Facebook getting out of this? Because I think, essentially the project is running for 4.5 million. I guess, what are they getting out of this? Because I think it's probably fair to say that across the board, these kind of large corporations are increasingly getting involved with news. For example, we've got the Financial Times, or FT Strategies at least, who are now working on the Google News Initiative project. So I think we're seeing kind of Facebook and Google moving into this news landscape, whereas previously there'd been this quite clear separation between, you know, these were the platforms and news is being published on them, but there's not too much kind of cross-pollination.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. And I think, you know, it is absolutely undeniable that, that Facebook and Google are, you know, getting involved in all sorts of, you know, journalism, either, you know, sort of directly or indirectly. I think, you know, there is a recognition now, both of those and indeed other, you know, tech disruptors, that the rapid development of their very successful business models and the declines of, you know, traditional economic business that the news media enjoyed. And I think there is a recognition too that that being the case, Google and Facebook do both have a responsibility to, you know, to kind of make up to some of the, for the difficulties that they have been the cause of. I mean, you know, degree of self-interest, of course, because, you know, that they're under a degree of public policy pressure. But I think it's also absolutely true to say that there are plenty of people at Facebook and Google in the UK, and I'm sure this is true elsewhere, whose backgrounds is in journalism and who genuinely understand the importance of good journalism. And if they have budgets that they can make available to helping a sector which they regard as clearly, you know, struggling to overcome, you know, significant structural challenges, then as far as I'm concerned, great. Provided that the publishers retain the evidence over what they publish and so on. That's absolutely fine. The Community News Project, I think, is a great example where Facebook have, you know, an amazingly innovative project which has, you know, put journalists back into underserved communities, which has focused on recruiting a really diverse range of individuals. And the publishers, you know, essentially decide what those journalists do day to day. That kind of project is a win-win. I wouldn't say that the question Google, but you know, I think you can have, you know, you can welcome the project that they are involved in, while, you know, remaining questioning on other matters. It's a huge supporter of our Journalism Diversity Fund, but ultimately, you know, Google isn't deciding who Bertha is go to at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, of course. So you've just mentioned the Journalism Diversity Fund there, which is something that I wanted to ask you about, because I think something which we quite often see, not so much this time on the podcast, but in the past, you know, when we're hosting speaker events, something which comes up quite often, at least from audience questions, is, you know, how did you get into the profession? And unfortunately, it's often the case that, you know, had a connection, be it a family connection or, you know, a friend, something along those lines. But am I right in saying that with the Journalism Diversity Fund, you're kind of offering this to people? People can apply from kind of underserved communities and can take the qualification with
them. Yeah, I mean, that's basically that. You know, I think we, you know, there's a guess, you know, to your question. I mean, you're right that that kind of networking and, you know, knowing the right has historically the industry, lots of people. I mean, I think, you know, that's a terrible plea. But it there's been less often, but it still happened. Obviously, the other, you know, traditional route in is through, and the NCTJ's Diploma in Journalism is, you know, is the key industry standard qualification in that regard. So, you know, about 2/3 of journalists in the UK have that qualification, and, you know, a great many of them have sort of, you know, gone the route of taking the qualification, starting off in a local newsroom, and then working their way into other parts of the industry, and, you know, that route has always been strong, and it remains very strong. But obviously, very conscious, and have been very conscious for a long time, that there is financial consequence of, you know, taking an additional qualification, and, you know, potentially not having any income at it. So 15 years ago, the NCTJ set up the Journalism Diversity Fund from the newspaper licensing agency, which is basically owned by the national newspapers. And over the last 15 years, we've increased the things that sponsor that fund. So last year, it had an income of about just over 300,000. And actually a fundraising drive this year, which is perhaps not ideal timing, with a view to increasing revenue to £500,000. Essentially, the money in that fund goes towards bursaries to people from diverse backgrounds who have financial need and who we are therefore able to support their NC qualification, either on fast track courses or on MA courses. We are able to fund people through an entire BA degree, because that obviously you can do the diploma that way too. But over this, we've been able to support over 350 people through our qualification, and you know that has made a genuine difference to what newsrooms look like. It's enabled people who would otherwise not have gone into journalism, not had the opportunity to do so via the qualification, to get into the sector. So, and you know, you see people now who've gone through that route doing great work. You know, I think at the moment, look at the BBC and someone like Rhianna Croxford is doing brilliant. She was a JDF recipient, you know, did her NCGA qualification really not that long in scheme. And I think anyone who, you know, the diploma in journalism as a, you know, at a kind of MA or route, but who, you know, basically can't afford to do it, should apt to the JDF, because that is what it's there for. And ultimately, I think people who take the diploma in journalism are the ones who have the best chance of landing jobs, because that's the qualification that many editors, you know, absolutely look for. And indeed, in some places, you know, you're not going to have your CV looked at, you know, so making that qualification as, you know, accessible as we possibly can through the JDF is a really key part of our mission.
So have you seen a clear change? I mean, I'm asking you this obviously with your NCTJ hat on, but perhaps also thinking back to your time in the newsroom at The Independent, because obviously we've still got issues with representation, we've still got issues with pay parity, but have you seen positive change over the last year, over the last 3 years?
I think there has been positive change, absolutely. And I think, you know, more media organisations are now conscious that, you know, this isn't just a kind of a nice to have. Now, actually, making use of the UK society, you know, there's a very clear imperative to do that. But it also requires explicit effort. It doesn't just happen. And I think those organisations that have been most successful at diversifying their newsrooms are the ones that have said, right, good enough in this area, how can we change? So I think there have been positive developments. And, you know, certainly the number of people that we've been able to support through the increased in the last 2 or 3 years, which is fantastic. But, you know, there is still an awful lot more to do. You know, when you look at the, you know, the kind of middle and upper ranks of the journalism, it is still proportionately white and middle class. And I think, you know, therefore things still need to change. There's more to do. And you know, that's why we are, you know, doing all we can to try and grow the JDF, because it's a tried and test, but we know we could also do much more with it. So I think to all those media, are enormously grateful to all those media companies who have thought about it. You know, our message is, you know, come on board, because, you know, this is a great way to change the industry in a way that benefits everyone.
And there was a really great quote last year at one of the Reuters Institute seminars in Oxford, which was it was along the lines of, you know, there's no diversity in the newsroom. If the newsroom's not diverse, you'll get the news wrong, because yeah, it does impact the reporting. Right?
I think that is absolutely right. You know, I think, you know, newsrooms where you've got a kind of an all-powerful editor who, you know, has a certain worldview and isn't really interested in listening to everyone else, you know, boss. And I think newsrooms which are, you know, diverse, have a range of voices that, you know, that can be heard and acted on, ones that, you know, feel as if they're getting closer to, you know, to the truths that might be out there, of which, of course, you know, there are many and none at the same time.
Yeah, and you mentioned just then as well that Oxford was one of the JDF recipients, and we've actually on the podcast already, so when I was speaking to Rita Chakrabarty, we you know, had a chat about the community affairs correspondent role.
Yeah,
about
absolutely. That is totally right. And, you know, it's so obvious that, you know, actually into making newsrooms more diverse, it pays off. You know, you end up producing better journalism because you have a better understanding of a wider range of issues, because you've got a wider range of views in your business. So, I mean, it makes sense. And, you know, it frustrates me really that, you know, that there remain companies that, yeah, they might have, you know, decent schemes of one sort or another. But I think that's such a good focal point, because it's not kind of directing individuals into, you know, a specific newsroom. It's basically saying, right, we're gonna get you trained so that you are able to start off in a newsroom once you've finished. And where you go from there is entirely up to you. So I mean, obviously, I'm biased because I look after the scheme, but I genuinely think it's brilliant. For a long time before I started this job, and the truth is it has made a difference. But as I say, there's still much more to do.
So, are you actively, and is the fund actively supported by news organisations in the UK, or is it the case that you're looking for external funding from you know, unaffiliated kind of companies?
I mean, the truth is that, you know, we will look for funding wherever we think we might find it. At the moment, supported by the newspaper licensee, which is the founding funder, receives significant support from the Google News Initiative, and it receives financial support from another, I think, 11 or 12 news media organisations, including Bloomberg, Daily Mail, Media, Reach, and a whole host more. But yeah, I mean, we would like media organisations that support it financially, and we absolutely welcome donations outside the sector, and there are plenty of people and organisations who, you know, who recognise the importance of diversifying the news media in this country, but who don't necessarily media themselves, and the JDF and I think it, you know, there are lots of other good schemes out there doing in this arena, but as I say, I think the thing that is so positive about the JDF is that built around a professional recognised qualification. You know, it is giving individuals something absolutely solid that can go onto their CV and can demonstrate to editors who finish the qualification they are newsroom ready. You know, and I think it's, I really think it's so important that emphasis on quality training, on the recognised qualification, is emphasised, because if you don't emphasise that, then the is that you're essentially saying, well, you know, let's place, you know, on the kind of the networking, on the contacts, on the, yeah, I mean, the occasional kind of spunky idea, which, you know, which can always be quite fun. But, you know, I do think that if we're going to get away from that whole sort of networking contacts type of recruitment that has gone on, then to a recognised professional qualification is absolutely imperative.
So we spoke very briefly before we started recording about, I guess, making a career in journalism at the moment, and you were very positive about the career opportunities, right?
Yeah, I am. I mean, it is difficult, and of course, when you see that journalists obviously have been, you know, furloughed in large numbers in the last few months, we've seen, you know, to a variety of places, from, you know, BuzzFeed, Microsoft ending its arrangement with, and, you know, that is really, it's kind of heartbreaking. And I think if you're someone who thinks, oh, I quite fancy a career as a journalist, you must look at you that's imploding. I mean, my broad view, there remain a very significant, you know, range of opportunities, and the news media sector in the UK, and they may be different opportunities to the ones that existed even 10 years ago. But nevertheless, if you are prepared to work hard, be innovative, and prepared to be flexible, then I think you can make it. And the truth is, it's a fascinating industry to be a part of. And you know, there is nothing I think quite so addictive as being in a newsroom. I think you just have to recognize that the route that you take in your career as a journalist is likely to be a bit more varied than the case before, and it's likely that you will need to kind of, you know, develop your skills really all the way through your career in a way that perhaps didn't happen 20, 30 years ago, because, you know, tech didn't change. I still think there are lots of good opportunities out there. I think journalism remains a brilliant, worthy career to have and to go. I think that's why I want to do a great job at the NCTJ, because I think preparing individuals for this career is incredibly important, because if you've got the right people in job, then we will serve audiences to the best that we can.
And again, just thinking about this kind of with your NCTJ hat on, and also in light of your experience at The Independent, I mean, when you're fielding applications for JDF bursaries, I don't know if that's necessarily a role which falls on you, but what sort of things stand out, I suppose, you know, to someone who's wanting to apply for a bursary for a professional qualification, or is wanting to go straight into the newsroom? What really jumps out? What sort of skills?
So I think there's a few things. I mean, in either scenario, I think what you want to see is an understanding of the kind of reality and the practicality of journalism, and you don't expect people to know every nut and bolt about it if they haven't worked in newsrooms before. But I think a demonstration of some level of understanding is so important, because it shows that someone has kind of done their work, and that is what you want in a journalist. You want someone who actually understands what they're talking about. So that is important. And the second thing I always looked for when I was employing people and looking at applications for apprenticeships at the Standard and the Indy was, how had they, demonstrate sort of journalistic ability, and, if they had a particular interest in a particular subject, let's say, and they'd set up a blog and had produced material just off their own bat, I always found that massively impressive. So that kind of willingness to put yourself out, even if it's to a very, very limited audience, I think is really important. Because I think it's a way to hone your writing skills or your broadcasting skills, whatever it might be. But also because I think it just shows a certain degree of self-confidence that goes a long way as a journalist. I think those are often the key things. I mean, obviously, the qualifications that somebody might have. I think that the NCTJ diploma gives people a definite advantage, because, effectively, if you're employing someone who you want to have kind of, the newsroom skills that you need straight away, then if you see they've got the diploma in journalism, you know that they'll be able to. If they don't, then they may sort of have other very, positive things about them. And, I'm not saying that every single journalist has to have the diploma, very obviously that isn't the case. But I do think it is a huge advantage. So I think to people who are thinking about in journalism and who perhaps are, an undergraduate degree, I think, think very carefully about that next step, because going on to do the diploma fast track course, which you can do in kind of 18 to 20 weeks, it really does stand you in very, very good stead. Alternative route in that some people tend to take is, sort of work experience placements and just hoping that things might. Of course, that can work, but I think you're probably trusting to chance rather more by taking that route alone without considering the qualification.
And it's interesting actually, because something which we've had people say in the past is that it almost acts as that kind of, I guess, first level filter. When it comes to recruitment, you just kind of tick off the NCTJ qualification and you're kind of through to the next step almost. It's kind of a way to, a way to filter out candidates for, rightly or wrongly.
Well, that's right. And for some publishers, you know, you basically can't, you don't have a hope of getting the job if you haven't got the diploma. That's their recruitment policy. Others are more flexible, and you know, some organisations obviously have kind of grad schemes, or will effectively put people through the diploma either via ship or via, you know, another training scheme. There are opportunities to you know, effectively get the qualification while you're working, which you know, can be a great thing to do. And certainly I was involved in the apprenticeship that the Standard ran, and it was fantastic. So I think, you know, if you're thinking about a career in journalism, just, you know, take the time to work out actually what routes are available, what routes are going to give you the best chance of getting in. My feeling is that the time when you know, newsrooms perhaps have less more than they had to go, and when you know, digital journalism skills are at a premium, which, you know, rightly or wrongly does tend to mean that you know, some nations have sort of shifted towards a younger workforce. Having the fundamental skills that the diploma in journalism teaches you, I mean, it's almost more of an advantage now than it would have been in the days when actually you could have just winged it for a while and learnt from people around you, and kind of, you know, got through the grounding now and can hit the ground running, as I said before. It's an advantage. And all news organisations are probably thought, you know, how much resource do we have to, you know, train people ourselves? Isn't it better to get people who already know what they're doing? That certainly is the sense that I've had from, you know, from a number of organisations that I've spoken to in the last few months.
Me too. And I always remember, I won't name names, but we interviewed one person who said that he just wouldn't hire someone who didn't come in with the kind of base skills, which he included shorthand as one of those, quite surprisingly for some people, I think. But I think it shows that people, you know, recruiters do still expect to see that some of the time.
I think that's right. And I mean, shorthand is, you know, it's the thing that always, you know, creates the most debate when it comes to the NCJ diploma, because, you know, some people still think it's absolutely imperative and some people are less fussy about it. I mean, the simple truth is, if you want to go and be a court reporter, you can't do it if you've got a shorthand, or certainly you can't do it that is going to be reliable enough for most news editors. Likewise, if you go and interview someone and your dictaphone breaks, well, you basically can't, you've got a shorthand. And if you're let's say you're a sports broadcaster, you know, a sports news reporter or not on a broadcast, and you go into a press conference and someone, you know, gives you, and you come out and you go straight on live TV, you know, what's better, desperately trying to remember exactly what it was that somebody said, or having a shorthand note in your book that you can just read out? I mean, it is a great skill. I mean, it is also true to say that there are lots of roles in journalism now which don't require it. Why? And, you know, it is now possible to get the NCTJ diploma without doing shorthand. The fact is that I think all current NCTJ diploma courses include the shorthand module, because, you know, most trade, well, all knows that it's going to give people a better chance of getting a job if a string to the bow. So, you know, I can't possibly get a job in journalism. You know, I always feel slightly embarrassed by the fact that, you know, I ended up sort of an accidental career and didn't have shorthand. And but, you know, the consequence of that was that there was, which I you know, my role was obviously, you know, primarily around that, you know, the whole kind of regulation side of things, and sort of shifted into doing more editorial work. I found that, yes, I could write a leader column because I could write and I could reason, I could write op-eds and that kind of thing. But on the couple of occasions that I had to write a news story, basically because, you know, somebody thought I might be able to help out, I basically couldn't do it. I just didn't have those skills of actually how do you structure a news story. I'm quite sort of startled by my, you know, total inability. But I think it was a really, you know, clear demonstration to me that journalism and news reporting in particular, and actually if you've got those that real kind of that understanding you get from doing a qualification about how you structure something, you know, how you write a good intro, how you structure the story, it just gives you a massive advantage. That's the long and short of it.
Thanks so much.
It's a real pleasure, and you know, I hope the society goes from strength to strength.
Thanks for listening, and thank you, Will, for joining us today. If you're interested in finding out more about the NCTJ, then you can visit their website at www.nctj.com. More information about Media Society can be found on our website at www.oxfordunimediasoc.com. Thanks for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.